Hello, on the Ark today, the clash of cultures in early Australian history. I'm Rachel Kahn. By the 1840s, Indigenous Australians had experienced dispossession, disease, and violence as a consequence of white settlement. But they were soon to experience something else, the earnest efforts of English missionaries to improve their lot by becoming Christian. Anglican missions at Lake Macquarie in Wellington Valley in New South Wales and the Methodist mission at Buntingale near Geelong, as well as the Port Phillip Aboriginal Protectors, were all part of the early effort to evangelise Indigenous Australians. Jessie Mitchell is completing her PhD on the subject for the ANU, where I spoke to her.
Missionaries would come to a group of people, would distribute presents and food and gifts. They would talk to them about God, they would be teaching them hymns, they would also be trying to learn local languages to varying degrees of success. As time goes on and they have more connection with people, you would also see missionaries struggling to get children to come to school on a daily basis, struggling to get people to dress in a way they thought was decent and Christian, trying to prevent certain fights and ceremonies, and trying to regulate people's contact with Europeans.
Well, that's a pretty massive cultural imposition there. But were there soapbox preachers? Were there revivalist tents?
I think they preached where they could. Some of them did build little churches. Others preached in the fields. They'd stand up on a rock and preach to people. They'd go into camps and preach to individual people and families. They did it wherever they could, really.
How have missionary historians regarded this early period?
It's been regarded by historians in general as a failure, basically, which was also how these missionaries ended up seeing themselves. It's said they made very few inroads, Aboriginal people took the rations and left, that there were no Christian conversions, basically.
Was the typical missionary's attitude to the Aboriginal people different from the attitude that the colonial settler had?
Yes, missionaries came to Australia as a result of humanitarian movements in England, which had been started to combat slavery, but also began with concern about conditions of Indigenous people throughout the empire. So what you get in missionary accounts is a great deal of paternalism, contempt or fear of aspects of Indigenous culture, but also a lot of anger and distress at violence and poverty that are happening as a result of colonialism.
So in some cases, the missionaries would be quite critical of the colonial settlers' attitudes to Aborigines.
Yes, very much so. Missionaries often felt quite isolated from other settlers, felt they were surrounded by immoral and sinful Europeans, and there's often a sense of being under siege from all these godless whites is how they're thought of.
Well, if the missionaries wanted to convert the Aborigines, how could they determine whether an Aboriginal person had actually undergone a conversion?
Missionaries had a very specific, and you might say culturally and historically specific, idea of what it meant to convert to Christianity. And the process one went through was an intense revelation of one's sins, a revelation of God's love and mercy, a sense of great gratitude, and an ongoing desire to evangelise others and to keep interrogating one's own religious worth. This becomes a problem when Aboriginal people don't seem to be often doing this.
Well, gosh, it must have been extremely difficult for the missionaries to convey some of the concepts, the concept of heaven or of hell.
It's very difficult. These were people, missionaries, who tried to learn local languages, and Aboriginal people spoke English to varying degrees. But missionaries often complained these languages don't have what they saw as spiritual words, and that's linked to concepts not existing. Concepts like sin, conversion, heathenism, and so forth are concepts that were very particular to the missionaries' own culture. So there's often this complaint that I just don't have the words to explain to people what I mean or to answer their questions. Some young men asked Buntingdale missionaries, what is heaven made of? Do we have to work there? Will there be a difference between black people and white people? Other questions related more to the fact that Aboriginal people looked around and saw other Europeans not following missionary rules and would say things like, why don't you talk that way to white fellas? Or if there's a hell, why aren't white fellas afraid of going there? Missionaries found it very difficult to answer some of these questions.
Absolutely. You mentioned young people. Were they the ones most likely to convert?
The small number of people missionaries describe as converts were generally young. Most children and young people didn't go through what missionaries saw as conversion, but those who did were often young people who were isolated from their own societies, sometimes children who'd been brought to live with missionaries. In particular, in Western Australia, there's quite a distinct mission where they had an early dormitory system there. So children were quite separate from their families. They were also working for white people there. So in that environment, they were much more receptive to a missionary message and perhaps much more in need of it.
Was that John Smithies?
Yes, it was a Wesleyan mission. He talks about very intense conversions. A couple of young girls have these amazing religious dreams of being visited by God and the devil and having to choose sides. And this is quite interesting because you don't see that on other missions. It's these particular children obviously had a really unusual experience there.
Was there any evidence that the dreams they were having, which were obviously biblically inspired, were somehow mixed in with their own traditional dreaming?
It's very hard to tell. I mean, some of them are very obviously biblical dreams. One girl talks about the devil taking her up and showing her a beautiful garden and saying, I will give you all of this if you will kneel down and pray to me. And she says, no, God is my father. It's hard to know how closely related it was to Indigenous culture, but it was suggested to me by someone recently that in some cases, dreams could be a way for some Aboriginal people to negotiate this transition to Christianity.
How did Aborigines respond to being constantly told that their ways were immoral?
There were not many huge religious conflicts. I think many people found it easier to ignore it or laugh it off. But some people do become quite angry, particularly when ceremonies were interrupted. And you have one great example of the missionaries at Wellington Valley going to a ceremony where a young man called Jemmy is dancing and stopping him. And he gets furious and says, why do you always come to the camp and tell us we're going to hell? Why don't you go to hell? So you do certainly get people being offended by this.
One of the things that I found in your study that was quite hard to understand was how Aborigines could attain to a level of physical appearance, for example, that they were expected to by the missionaries.
Becoming physically civilized was, I think, seen as quite an important part of mission and protectoral life. Particularly, it meant wearing clothes, eradicating things like body paint and body oil, which were described as dirty, but which had all these Indigenous significances that missionaries found quite threatening. It particularly meant when people came to church, there was an expectation that you would wear clothes and wash and comb your hair and things like that. And it sounds quite trivial, but for missionaries, it was a sign that you were embracing European society and that you were learning to be more physically self-disciplined and more physically self-aware.
What other difficulties did they have to confront? For example, in church, men and women are supposed to sit together.
It was difficult. There were, I think, a lot of quite complicated rules in Aboriginal societies about kinship avoidance, which means staying away from certain relatives according to your relationship with them. What this meant sometimes in practice was that young men who were going through initiation were required to stay away from women and would not come to church because they said there's too many women there. In other cases near Melbourne, you get women who have to avoid certain men who would come to church but sit with their backs to the men and to the missionary who didn't like this at all. He felt it was rude, but they didn't see it that way.
Well, despite what would have also been some pretty significant language barriers, the Aboriginal people seem to have enjoyed going to church and singing the hymns.
Missionaries talk quite a bit about people's love of singing, and I think that comes from being in an oral culture that enjoys that. As for enjoying church in general, I think it was mixed. At Wellington Valley, one of the missionaries comments, people are behaving very well in church, they're very quiet and polite, and they only occasionally fall asleep. So you really wonder what people were enjoying there. It might have been the free food afterwards.
Sounds like today.
Possibly, yes.
How did Aborigines respond to the idea of having a personal relationship with God?
There was a very strong notion, I guess, particularly amongst evangelical Protestants, that conversion was about establishing a really intense and private relationship with God. Without wishing to generalise too much, if you're looking at Indigenous societies where following spiritual law could often be more a case of following the law and enduring any external punishments that come to you if you break that, the notion of interrogating your private soul and being very frightened of eternal damnation may have been a notion that was fairly alien to Aboriginal people at that time. And it's something missionaries, I think, had trouble conveying.
The idea that one has to give up everything about Indigenous beliefs when becoming a Christian seems to have been quite hard to impose. Were there individuals who managed to straddle both cultures fairly comfortably?
I think so, although missionaries probably didn't always find it very comfortable. Ellie Threlkeld, who's working at Lake Macquarie, which was north of Newcastle at the time, speaks about one man in particular who's quite well known, called Biriban or John McGill, who works for years as Threlkeld's translator. He's very close to Threlkeld. He helps him translate the Bible and various things into Awabakal. But Biriban is also leading his people in ceremony and living very much that Indigenous life as well. For Threlkeld, he sees this as evidence that Biriban is not a Christian yet. Biriban himself may have seen this in quite different terms.
Did you ever have any examples of missionaries who changed their rather demanding or exclusive views? Did they ever soften up about Aboriginal culture?
I'm not sure they necessarily softened up. There were certain things they would tolerate. I mean, there was an awareness at this time that missionaries didn't have a great deal of physical power. They could manipulate ration systems, but other than that, it was hard for them to force people not to initiate the young boys or not to leave for ceremony. So it was more a sense that they would tolerate certain things, certain ceremonies and ways of living, because partly because they knew they couldn't do much about it anyway.
Finally, Jesse, after the 1840s, the missionaries seemed to have more success. Why is that?
I think that there's probably two things that change. One is that dispossession becomes really consolidated by the 1850s. People lose a lot of their mobility. They lose most of their land. Squatters are coming in and taking over everything. The government gains more control over people. They can control where people come and go much more than they could before. So the missions start to see much more of a haven. And for many people, if a mission was established on their country, it was a way of staying in your country if you'd follow mission rules. I suppose the second thing that changes is the generational switch. Young people who were children on the first missions and who were acquainted with missionaries and protectors as young people have a good 10 or 20 years to think about the implications of this and to decide whether they are much more willing to obey these rules as adults, whereas their parents, who were more tied to older ways of living, were less inclined to do so. You get a really interesting figure of Simon Wonga, who's a really important Aboriginal politician in Melbourne in the late 19th century, who had been a young boy on the early protectorate stations and who had sort of grown up seeing this process of colonisation, seeing his land gradually taken over. And he's one of the first people who's calling for missions in the 1850s and 60s because he's seen what that means and he's decided that he's prepared to tolerate that in order to stay in his land.
Simon Wongo sounds like an interesting fellow. Jessie Mitchell is completing her doctorate in Australian history at the ANU. Join me, Rachel Kahn, for more Tales from Religious History on the ARC at the same time next week.